You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am really excited to have Riley Sager on the show with me today. He has a phenomenal new book. It's called Home Before Dark. And if you love thrillers like I do, this book takes that love that you have and ratchets it up to a pretty intense level. If you're picking out your summer reading for vacation and everybody's going to have a little time off this weekend, maybe this is a must-have on your thriller reading shelf. Welcome to the show, Riley.
Thank you for having me. And so many nice things about the book.
you're so welcome. It was all true. So take that for what it's worth. Riley, we begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Ooh, that's a hard one. You really come out of the gate with the hard questions, don't you? I think it would be, I was 10 and I was reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and that book just transported me just to another world. Like, everything in my life just fell away when I was reading that book. And it was such a magical experience that I think the seeds were planted right there that it might be a cool thing to tell stories myself and be the one transporting other people. So I think that's when it started, with Willy Wonka.
You know, that, and I'm a kid of the 70s and 80s, and you think back to that Gene Wilder movie, and it really had such an innocent facade on it, and the book especially. But there's so much going on under that top layer of accessibility, and it's a kid's book. It's, and there's some really, really dark stuff going on there. Do you think that, or stories like that, really informed the way that you think about stories? And, because judging by your books now, there's a little bit of that there.
Yeah. I didn't even think about how, that story is really dark, because I don't think,
yes.
I just sort of assumed that all the other kids died. Like, I don't
yeah,
know if we see
this.
Them afterwards, if we see, like, Augustus Gloop again.
Yeah.
Like, I just assumed, like, oh, he's dead.
Oh,
he's
gone. He's definitely dead.
I think part of it is I just, even as a kid, was always drawn to scary things. Like, Halloween was the best time of year. Anytime there was something spooky on TV, I wanted to watch it. I remember watching The Wonderful World of Disney and seeing the, it was like the Ichabod Crane story, Legend of Sleepy Hollow, and the Headless Horseman being like so terrifying to me, yet I loved it.
Yeah.
And so I think that was, really formed my worldview.
So Riley, as a kid who reads that story and then, kind of falls in love with that genre, and your eyes are opened to the possibilities of storytelling. What does that look like as an adolescent who is, growing up, trying to figure out what you're going to do in the world, with the rest of your life? There's a lot of people come back to writing once they've kind of got their footing in life and, dealt with this thing of, paying bills and having to provide for yourself and a family and all that kind of stuff. What were you thinking? What did that look like to you? And did it seem like it was a goal that was attainable?
It really didn't seem like it was attainable. I as a teenager, I fell in love with the movies. And I didn't think that I was talented enough in any way to be part of like making movies. So my next step was, oh, I will become a film critic. And so I studied film in college, like film theory was my major. And all that does is really prepares you to talk sometimes eloquently about movies you've watched and not have any career. But through that, I fell into the world of newspapers. I was a film critic for my college newspaper and then sort of worked my way up and became a news editor, and just out of college, just got a job in a newspaper. And so I worked in journalism for 20 years. But always in the back of my head was, you know, I might want to write something at some point. I really want to tell a story. And I just worked at it, you know, a couple false starts, a couple books that I completed that never went anywhere. And eventually working hard enough and getting better at my craft to be the writer I am today.
Well, I know that you've worked as a journalist and an editor. And I'm always fascinated by people who write for a living, but don't write fiction. You know, I worked a lot of years in IT, and you know, that's an easy switch when you go home to flip your brain from that to writing fiction, and you know, writing as a hobby and trying to get published and all of this kind of stuff. There's a definite switch that you flip. But when you write or are involved in the business of words during the day, how do you flip that switch to writing for yourself? And does it, you know, does it feel like a break from the rest of the world?
Well, I was most of my journalism career was spent on the editing side. So there was a lot of copy editing. There was a lot of page design. There was a lot of headline writing. And the good part about that is once the newspaper went to press, you were done. So you didn't take any of that home with you.
Right.
And so that allowed me to, I'd get home and be, you know, not quite tired enough to go to bed. So I'd grab a notebook and a pen and just be like, okay, I'm going to try to write some stuff now. And it was a nice escape. It was a nice sort of way to end the day, just working on something for myself.
When you started working on the first book that would become your first published novel, was that the first thing that you had written and finished that became your first published book?
Oh, no. There were many, many. I think every author has the what we call the, like drawer novels, where you write it and you throw it in the drawer and never look at it again. In my case, they're not even drawer novels. They were floppy disk novels. And so I don't even think I have the discs anymore. And even if I did, I don't have a computer that I'd be able to open them on. So they're lost for good. And that's probably for the best.
Well, what book became your first book?
Well, Riley Sager is not my real name. This is pretty common knowledge. It's a pen name. I wrote books under my real name. And the first one came out in 2010. And it did not perform well at all. Like it just, and that's sort of a reality a lot of authors sometimes face, is that your book just doesn't find an audience or readership. And where do you go from there? And so for me, I wrote several books that just weren't going anywhere and I wasn't getting a readership. And so it came time to really rethink my whole entire writing career. And that got even more important when journalism sort of took a downturn and I was laid off from my newspaper job. So here I was, like, no job, no publisher. What am I going to do with my life? And so I came up with the idea for the first Riley Sager book, Final Girls. And that really was my last ditch attempt to make a go at this writing thing. And it ended up working out more amazing than I could ever have imagined it.
Yeah, I'll say so. I think you've found a little success at doing this. That's Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writer's community.
writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.
You have a really interesting niche that your books fall in, and you know that when you see a Riley Sager book that it's going to be a thriller. You're going to be on the edge of your seat the entire time with some elements that we think of as horror. There are a lot of thrillers that, you know, are heart pounding. They get you ramped up and, you know, there are twists and turns that are shocking. And usually horrible things happen in these books, but we wouldn't necessarily categorize them as horror. Where does that line exist for you, and how do you, you know, label what you do? Which camp are you in, if you have to be in a camp, or, you know, if you think of like the writer's brain, you know, what tropes am I going to use? Because I need to know where this book goes in the bookstore so people can find it. What do you think about those delineations we make between thriller and horror and that sort of thing? And as a writer, how do you navigate those waters?
I've been categorized as pretty much everything except like romance and cozy mystery. Like I've been all over the map, and I think that's really cool because I love not being pigeonholed. It might make it harder for bookstores to know where to put my book on the shelf. Like, what section does he go in again? But I think that I really straddle that fine line between horror and thriller. If I had to land on anyone, it would be thriller. Because I heard this great definition of horror, that horror is like there's a tear in the fabric of reality. And my books tend to still be mostly in reality. Like, most of these things could happen in real life. Thank God they don't, but they potentially could. So that's why I always sort of land on the thriller side. But I've been told I'm kind of a genre unto myself, which I love.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. And hopefully bookstores sprinkle your books and a few over in thrillers and a few over in horror. And, you know, that's kind of the best of all worlds, isn't it?
Yeah. Put them in romance and cozy mystery. That's good. I'm fine with that. More people that see them, the better.
That's right. That's right. Riley, I'm curious, when you begin a new book project, when you're dealing with that first kernel of an idea, and we all know what that's like when a story first starts, and you don't have a plan for it or anything yet, it's just the beginning stages. What do those beginning stages look like for you? Is it a character that comes to you, and you start, you know, asking what's going on in her life, and it just kind of becomes a mystery? Is it a scene? Is it some sort of plot device that you've thought of, and then you need, you know, to figure out some characters that might make that setting interesting? How does it usually begin for you?
For me, it really starts with the plot. Like, I come up with a scenario, and, you know, in the case of Home Before Dark, I was listening to a podcast about the Amityville Horror, and how it, you know, it's mostly everyone pretty much agrees it's made up, but the Lutz family swore until their deaths that it was real. And it just made me think of the kids involved and what it must be like for them, and whether do they think it's real. And so this idea of a woman, when she was a child, lived in this house that became like this phenomenal bestseller, and she's lived in the shadow of this house her entire life and gets a chance to go back. Like, that was very compelling to me. And so it always starts with this germ of a plot. Like, this person does this, or something happened to this person and gets a chance to return. And then it becomes a matter of just really deep thought. And it's crazy that this is part of my job now, is just to sit with a cup of coffee for hours and just think, like, okay, what characters would populate this plot? Where would it take place? Is it feasible to write an entire book around this idea? And just slowly, through just a lot of thinking and pondering, the idea begins to form. And then I start to write down, you know, potential avenues I could take and potential outlines. And it's just a very slow, thoughtful, methodical process.
So let's talk about that for just a minute. The concept of ghost stories really plays into the plot of your new book. You know, you mentioned earlier that your books tend to be rooted in reality, and that's what makes them kind of lean more toward thriller than maybe a Stephen King book, or, you know, a standard horror that we think about. What were some of the things that you started thinking about, and what were some of the unique things that you could do with a haunted house type, you know, theory that made the writing of this interesting for you?
Well, with haunted houses, everyone has that concept of what it is. Like, you say the words haunted house and people immediately conjure up all these things in their minds. And so it was very interesting and fun to think of ways to exploit that. You know, like, okay, what am I going to lean into? What tropes am I going to subvert? What am I going to turn on its ear? And so there were things I knew the book needed to have, like bumps in the night, a Ouija board, because you got to have a Ouija board. And it became like, how do I want to tell a haunted house story in a fresh way? And a lot of my books deal with flashback structures and unreliable narrators and things happening in the past that haunt the present. And so for me, this idea of not only having this woman return to the house that her father wrote about, but to include the full book that her father wrote, would be a very cool way to do a new twist on the haunted house book. And so we have two narratives, and one of them, her father's book, serves not only as flashbacks, but also the unreliable narrator. And I thought that was a really cool, fresh take on the whole haunted house genre. And so it was a matter of really trying to do the best job I possibly could at kind of toying with all of that and exploiting the expectations and subverting them.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing, from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by ProWritingAid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.org. We all have read a novel that was an epistolatory novel where, you know, it's a collection of letters or things like that from the past. And there are some books that are really great that are laid out that way where, you know, the story unfolds as if someone is reading, you know, these letters from someone or, you know, their recordings of something. But you mentioned that, you know, you've included this old story with the new story that's happening, air quotes, now. When did that idea come to you? And was that like one of those lightning bolt ideas? Like, oh, I can include the old story with the new one, and the character now is discovering this. Kind of, what was the thought process of bringing these two different narrative structures together?
It was pretty much there from the beginning. I knew if I was telling a story about a woman going back to a house made famous by her father's book, that the book itself was going to play a major part in it. And so from the very start, I'm like, okay, we need excerpts from this book. We need a lot of pieces from this book. And then it occurred to me very early on, you know what? Let's just throw in the whole book. Why not? And because I do play a lot with flashbacks, that just really seemed to me like a great way of doing that. They're flashbacks, but not really. Instead of flashbacks, it's an actual book. And also, just from a narrative standpoint, it became convenient to serve as like a source of exposition. Like when Maggie returns to this house, there doesn't need to be a long scene of, okay, here's this room and here's this room and learning the lay of the land, because the reader already knows it because of her father's book.
Well, and using flashbacks can be confusing for readers, especially in the beginning of a book. You know, for 3, 4, 5 chapters, you'll catch yourself go, okay, what is this, a flashback here? What's going on? Until you kind of understand the rhythm of the book. But by doing this, I mean, it's immediately immersive.
It really is. And it helps that the book, you know, the designers of the book really laid it out in such a way where, you know, there's a different font and a different sort of style to the page of her father's book. I mean, her father's book gets its own title page inside the book. And so, and there was at one point we were discussing, should the top of the page, instead of reading Home Before Dark, should the portions of her father's book, should that top of the page say, you know, House of Horrors, which is the book her father wrote. And it just became too logistically crazy for us to do that. Because then we're like, what about page numbers? Is it going to have separate page numbers? Is there going to be a separate author at the top? And it just became, we got really overwhelmed. We got into the weeds for a while of like, how are we going to lay out this book?
Yeah. Oh man, that brings up all kinds. I guarantee there are people listening now that are just getting a migraine. Like, I would not want to inherit that kind of problem.
I really pity the paginators who had to put it all together. I really do.
We've mentioned a couple of times that are talking about the idea of tropes and what makes a book. What makes it fall into a certain category. And a lot of times it comes down to the tropes that are used in that book or the familiar elements of story, if you want to kind of look at it that way, that, you know, when you start dissecting a horror novel, you know that it's going to have this and this and this, and that's kind of what makes it and what makes it follow that form. How do you feel about tropes? And, you know, since this is a ghost story of sorts, did you think about the ghost story tropes before you began it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love a good trope because it's shorthand. Like, as an author, I don't need to do as much work. like, which is, you know, anything that makes it easier for me, I'm all aboard for. But with tropes, like, you know, if, you know, with the book Final Girls, like, people know slasher movies, so they know the tropes of those. So I don't have to explain them, and the reader just sort of knows what they're getting. And then the fun part is to sort of string them along thinking they know what they're getting, and then to pull that rug out from under them and give them something completely different that they're not expecting. And so when it came time for to write about a haunted house, there were definitely ideas that I wanted to take and twist them a little bit. And so, like, in, you know, Home Before Dark, there is a Ouija board, but the main form of communication with spirits is something else entirely. The Ouija board is thrown in the trash really early on. And so it always was like, okay, this is what you think is going to happen. This is what you're familiar with. Now we're going to enter unfamiliar territory.
So we've talked about the book, and we've kind of danced around it while talking about tropes and some of the elements of it. Let's talk specifically about the book. Home Before Dark has been out for a couple days now. Tell me about Maggie Holt, and how did she come to embody this story?
She really was an unwilling participant in all of this. She's a character in this book her father wrote, a book that she thinks is a complete hoax, and it's followed her around her entire life. And there's also this aspect of not being able to trust her parents. You know, she thinks they've lied to her entire life. And so she's really comes from a place of skepticism and also a bit of annoyance and hurt. Like, she's hurt that her parents didn't trust her with the truth. And it was a very interesting character to sort of explore her mindset. And one of the things that I realized when I was writing the book and writing her character is how it really makes her doubt herself, because she's read her father's book. She knows how she's portrayed in this book. And she's hurt a little bit. She's like, is that how my father saw me? Is that how I was as a child? I don't recognize the little girl in this book. And so it's really a matter of her trying to sort of piece together not just her family's story, but piece together herself. Like, who am I? Like, am I the girl in this book, or am I my own woman who doesn't believe in any of this? And it was a very interesting character to explore. She was fascinating to me.
What's fun about horror to me is that there are all these great tropes that we get to play with and set pieces that you get to use. But, you know, at the core of it, the story is really not about the things that go bump in the night. It's about uncovering who this character is and finding out what she's made of and, you know, her place in the world and what matters to her. When you kind of found out, you know, because for every writer, somewhere in the process, you discover what the book is about, and you're like, oh, okay, that's what this story is about. When you kind of came to that point with Maggie, what were you thinking about what the story would be, and did it change the way that you looked at the set pieces that you're using and things like that?
Well, it really came about late in the game, to be honest, after the book was finished and I was in the editing process. I wanted her father's book to be the scary stuff. I wanted that to be the ghost and the spooks and the chills. And then I wanted her story to be deeper and almost more frightening, because there are some things more frightening than ghosts. And in the editing process, that's when I started to realize the theme that I'd unconsciously written into this book of this quest to figure out herself and her place in her family's history, and how does she deal with that and move forward. And it really became a much more deeper book than I think I originally intended. Pleasantly so. I was very impressed with myself. I'm like, oh, this has a lot more depth than I originally thought it did. Good on me.
So Riley, you know, with the schedules of publishing, we know that this book has been off of your desk for probably a year after you've turned it in, gone through some editing, things like that. But invariably, your attention has probably turned to a new project. What are you working on now?
I'm working on another book right now that will be coming out next summer. And I really can't say anything about it except that it's going to be the complete opposite of Home Before Dark. No two books in one this time. No flashbacks. I want it to be just sort of like a full throttle, you know, full of adrenaline thriller.
Amazing. I can't wait to see what you come up with. Riley, if people are just learning about you, God forbid, and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do in your epic back catalog, where can they find you online and dig into all the great stuff that you do?
My website is RileySagerBooks.com, and there's all my past books, all what's coming up, and links to all my social media stuff. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and you know, so it's all right there in one centralized place.
Awesome. We're going to send everyone to see you and to pick up their copy of Home Before Dark. Riley, this has been so much fun chatting. I'm recommending the book to everyone this summer, and we wish you much success on it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, overcomplicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today. World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too.